The major reason that resolutions fail is because the resolution itself was too big. And if that desire and intention isn't really intrinsic in you, then the motivation to sustain the behaviour that you have to do or not do to achieve your resolution just won't be there.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. Wow, the first day of 2021. Happy New Year, everyone. Before I pop into everything, I just want to take one moment to give such a special thanks to this community. I didn't get a chance to fully wrap up last year, but I mean, because of you all, it has been such a privilege as a brand for 2B Magnetic to really show up and serve in any way that we can. And some really cool highlights from 2020, even though it was a year that was full of so much uprooting and change. And well, we all know the deal by now. It was also a year that was really profound for us as a brand, and to watch the reflection of our community continue to manifest and achieve really, really beautiful things. So I personally want to thank you all. As a highlight, we wrapped our first manifestation speaking tour in January with fully sold out shows to Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, and London when we could still go to big crowded things. And that was a huge feat and really exciting moment for us. We also launched our coaching program, starting with Amanda Blair and then welcoming all four of our coaches, Amanda, Atara, Sawa, and Heather. And that's been really profound to watch the support that they have given this community and everything that their clients are manifesting now due to that. We also were able to launch our very exclusive Pathway community group. When you have the Pathway membership, you have access to that. And so that's really beautiful because it's really such a sacred and safe, special place for our members who are in it to connect and to join and to ask questions and find community and put together your magnetic meetups. And that is just really fun to watch grow. So about half of you are in there. If you are a Pathway member and you're not, go ahead and just reach out and we'll make sure that you get in there because it's a really, really special place. One of the very coolest things, which is so pertinent to today, is we got to welcome the collaboration of our advisor, our neuroscientist and psychiatrist advisor, Dr. Tara Swart, to really put the science behind our method and inside of all of our workshops. And that was really a tremendous and huge accomplishment for all of us as a team this year. And it's been the most glorious experience working with her and especially collaborating on each of these explained episodes. It was a true privilege to put out the workshop boundaries and the daily practice. And that's been really fun to watch your feedback and how powerful each have been for you. And last but not least, it's been really cool to put out the Ask a Manifestation question service so that you can go ahead for $25 and ask any questions to the coaches that you're having on your manifestation journey and practice. And they send you back a 2 to 5 minute voice note that reads the energetics of the situation, tells you which workshops to work through, and gives you a blueprint of how to unblock and navigate what's coming up for you. And then we finished out the year with the Magnetism Challenge, which, pat yourself on the back. For those of you who joined along, I mean, this is huge that you finished the challenge. Today is your last day. I mean, let's all, no matter where you are in the challenge, enjoy doing the Magnetic Self DI today. And that's a great way to celebrate the hard work that you put in definitely please share everything you've manifested as an expander that we can go ahead and add to the motivation to expand other people. And wherever you are in the challenge, go ahead and finish it out into January and wrap it up. As a collective, we are now going to move into working through inner child together this month because we have a really fun and exciting announcement coming up very soon. A really fun collaboration that we'll be launching this month with Alexa Smart and TBM. And Reparent is the perfect, perfect workshop to be doing alongside this beautiful, beautiful announcement that's coming out. To be the first to hear about this, make sure that you text us at 1-213-423-5226 or sign up for our newsletter to hear about it first. Also to get tips, reminders, updates, and how we're navigating manifestation work. The product release is going to be so powerful. We've all had a chance to take it and do it. And yeah, I don't want to give away too much because we'll be talking about that very soon. But if you have completed the challenge, go ahead and move into Inner Child. We'll be doing that together. And if you're still in the challenge, go ahead and continue and finish it up. You can find the links below for both and also the links below to find our number to sign up for texting or our newsletter. Now let's move into today's wonderful episode with Dr. Tara Swart. Just a little fun thing to look forward to at the end of it. We give a nice little roadmap of how to harness and use this energy at the top of 2021. So look out for that because it's a beautiful time to cast your list if you didn't get a partake in the manifestation challenge. And go ahead and join us in Inner Child. All right, on to the episode. Welcome back to another Explained episode, which has quickly become your favorite segment of the entire podcast, Expanded. In Explained, Dr. Tara Swart joins my co-host Jessica Gill and I in deep diving on specific themes within manifestation, which all of you love because it's where we bridge our process of manifestation with neuroscience and psychology and the deep science that anchors it all together. Back in July, Dr. Tara Swart joined us as our psychology and neuroscience advisor. And why we handpicked her, besides the fact that she's so unbelievably marvelous, she has a PhD in neuroscience and a former medical career as a psychiatrist of 7 years. She's also a senior lecturer and on faculty at MIT, no big deal, and senior lecturer at King's College. She's currently working on research projects on plasticity and epigenetics. She has Google Talks, LinkedIn, Facebook, and 2 TED Talks. She's also the author of 3 books, her latest being The Source. So let's get into another Explained episode where Dr. Tara and I break down the energetics and science of manifestation, offering a roundtable perspective on the deep intricacies and connection. Here goes.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Explained and Happy New Year. We are now in 2021. Welcome back, Lacey and Dr. Tara.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you. Happy New Year from me, too.
So, like all of our Explains, I love kicking us off with a quote, and this one's no different. I thought this was a perfect inspirational quote, especially as people are diving into this new year with new hopes on the horizon. Decide that today is the last day you keep settling. So the theme of today is really diving into resolutions. We typically see the resolutions as that pesky list of items you're crafting at the top of the new year to start on a blank slate and attempt to force yourself brand new habits where you're going to transform your whole mind, body, and soul. And actually, I was doing a bit of research into it, and apparently humans have been setting New Year's resolutions for over 4,000 years. So it's deeply ingrained in our bodies that at the time of a year change and the seasons changing and all of that, that we sort of are setting our intentions of what's to come. But studies show that, you know, 60% of us that make New Year's resolutions, only 8% of us actually achieve them. So I think the question on a lot of people's mind is, why are we so bad at keeping resolutions? And also a second part to that question is like, how can we reframe resolutions? How do we understand resolutions through manifestation? Because that's setting an intention and a goal to shift our life. and how can we be more successful with them? So Lacey, kick us off the manifestation front too.
Yeah, because I'm way more curious to hear, Dr. Tara, what you have to say, just even on an epigenetic level with that. Geez, 4,000 years. You know, it's interesting. Always from the beginning, literally, I think I started this post around this time 4 years ago, where I would always shift this community from resolve to intentions. Because to me, resolving to do something, and that's where I think Dr. Tara will be way more key at us understanding why we fail at it so often. I learned at a very young age that you can't change somebody else who doesn't want to change. And the same thing goes for us. When we have this arbitrary marker of a year where we're like, we're going to drop the weight, stop the smoking, do the whatever, you know, like whatever the things are, it's kind of a spiritual bypass notion in the sense that we're just going to stop arbitrarily on this date rather than doing the deeper work of why do we do those things? You know, why do we numb? Why do we, and I would say falling under numbing, like we've talked about in other podcast episodes, but the eating, the overeating, you know, the emotional eating and the smoking and the whatever, and, you know, the habits. So for me, for on a manifestation front, I've been way more interested in intentions, you know, calling in things around this time, which is what we really focused on with this magnetism challenge. So for anybody who's finishing that, it's really key to finish it. You're not resolving to finish it. You're actually putting the work in to see a difference, to connect with your manifestation. So that's where I'm at with everything, is much more about doing the heavy lifting of what's in our way, where are we not expanded, where are we not passing tests, upon calling in something. And I see way more success with that around this time. And then, you know, there's a lot more fruition from that that we can garner than I think resolving to fill in the blank at the new year. So I'll kick it over to you, Dr. Tar, because I'm so curious about the science of failure, what you think just on an epigenetic level that we've been doing that for so long, and your general thoughts.
Yeah, I love the idea that you picked up on that we've been doing it for 4,000 years. And I suspect that Jessica's statistic of the percentage of success hasn't changed much in 4,000 years. So expectation is a really interesting thing. We've spoken quite recently about boundaries, but all of the things that really prime our neural pathways in childhood are boundaries, expectations, values, roles, secrets, identity, like who we identify with, or who people, you know, put upon us that you're just like that person. And so the thing about resolutions is not just the expectations that you have for yourself or expectations that society or your family may have for you, but it's this whole epigenetic thing of this pressure of choosing something, a big goal. And that's where the problem starts. The major reason that resolutions fail is because the resolution itself was too big. And you know, with neuroplasticity, I'm always saying it's about repetition and emotional intensity. And so you picked up on both of those in an energetics way, which is the emotional intensity part is, do you really want to do this? And if that desire and intention isn't really intrinsic in you, then the motivation to sustain the behavior that you have to do or not do to achieve your resolution just won't be there. And when Jessica said we're going to speak about resolutions, the first thought that came into my mind was, I've been working on micro habits and quarterly resolutions for so long now that I don't have any New Year's resolutions. And that really struck me, that that was the innate thought that came up. And obviously that's centered around the repetition piece, which is that it should be small things that you can do every day that then accumulate into a habit that is the natural neural pathway for your brain. So, and the year that I decided to go quarterly, you know, I picked sort of 12 small things and I did 2 to 4 things per quarter. At the end of the first quarter, I thought, well, the 10,000 steps and the drinking that much water, I don't even think about those things now. So that's done. I'll move on to the next two. And that's what I like about the daily reprogramming exercises. They're something that can be sustained in that way. They have the repetition. And alongside whatever your intention is, they can really help to drive that emotional intensity, which is your motivation as well.
And I just want to point out one thing too, like what I'm really kind of getting from that as well, Dr. Tara, is that we have these subconscious, perhaps oftentimes limiting beliefs that are rooted deep within us. So we might want to exercise and lose the weight consciously. That's a very common resolution for a lot of people. But if we really get to the core of it, what we want is maybe it's a feeling of recognition. Maybe it's a physical goal, like we want to lift a certain amount of weight. The reason, the root reason behind it is very important. And if that root reason is not aligned with our subconscious beliefs, what we picked up through childhood, through programming, then we're not going to succeed at it. But if we look at resolutions as habit changing, and then we, through emotional intensity, repetition, continually form a new neural pathway to replace that limiting one, we can now achieve our resolution because that limiting belief is no longer the primary thought pattern.
And that you're also saying micro, so that it's, you know, approachable. It's not way too lofty.
I really want to bring together what you've both said and, you know, go back to what Jessica was saying about the real reason behind why you want to do what you want to do. And, you know, often with weight loss, it's if I'm slimmer, I'll have much more confidence and then I'll meet an amazing partner. So actually the things you need to be looking at are your confidence and the fact that you want to be in a relationship. And so I genuinely believe that if you come up with a resolution and you say, okay, I'll start that on the 1st of January, and this is going back to what you were saying, Lacey, then that actual motivation isn't there. Because if you had, you know, the right amount of motivation, you'd start today.
Agreed. Agreed. My question to you too, Dr. Tara, which you might have covered, but I remember when that habit changing book came out and it was like 21 days it takes to create a new habit. How long does it take based on scientific research if you're doing the emotional intensity and repetition to create a new micro habit that builds on and becomes a big habit?
So it's very key that you've asked the question like that, which I like, because normally I would say, how long is a piece of string? Because it depends what you're trying to change. If it is learn a language, then properly, that's going to take 6 to 12 months, maybe. But if it's go to the gym 3 times a week, that could easily be done in 2 or 3 weeks. So it does depend on the magnitude of the task. And that's why it's so important to break it down into what I call bite-sized chunks. And, you know, there's all various things like 21 days, 66 days, 30 days. I wouldn't do it like that. I would maybe set yourself at, you know, a time like I do quarterly, which is 90 days, or just do the thing until it's natural to you and you do it without even thinking.
That's how I usually approach a new habit.
Yeah. And it's going to be different for different people. So I don't really want to answer that question with a number. But the reason I love the way you asked it, because you said, how long does it take to embed the micro habits that accumulate to a macro habit? And that's the way to think about it.
And then for somebody, for instance, who's listening to this and they're doing this work, they're doing the daily practice to build that habit. You know, if you were working with somebody directly or talking to them just from a scientific perspective to make that habitual weekly and see the results from it, what would you suggest the micro approach and the emotional intensity combination with repetition could look like to be very successful and not that daunting?
Well, we did think about this quite a lot when we were revamping the daily reprogramming exercises. You know, I came up with 3 times a week to do an actual DI minimum. And that's why I really love that there are different grades of difficulty of task, because sometimes it's just journal, sometimes it's deeper prompts, sometimes it's a DI. And so if you're having a busy day, and you don't think you can set aside 20 minutes to actually close your eyes and do the DI, then you can still do the journaling, or you can read over your journal, or you could look at the prompts and, you know, promise to answer them the next day, or, you know, actually answer them. So it has to be things of different time length that can be fitted into a busy week. But you kind of have to make a commitment to yourself that, okay, if I don't do the DI today, I am going to have to do 3 this week. And that's where, you know, resolve is a good thing. So I was thinking, for example, I don't set big resolutions at the beginning of the year, but I try to take on a neuroplasticity learning each year. So if that, you know, 1 year was a language, then I get the lessons and I set some sort of accountability outcome. That's important too, the accountability piece, because that's, again, why people fail. Is you say I'm going to lose 10 pounds or whatever, And then nobody checks up if you've lost it. And if you're tempted by the sweet foods in your house, and you know that apart from weighing yourself, nobody's ever going to really know, then it's much easier to fall into temptation. Whereas if you are in a group, or there's an app where you have a photo of yourself just in your underwear and it's uploaded to the community, and then you have the before and after, that's much more successful than, you know, just trying to lose weight by yourself, for example.
Yeah, I love everything you said. And even on that last part, I mean, I don't know anybody who's heard of, I'm going to butcher her name, but Kayla Itzol. She's a perfect example of that, of using before and afters and showing people's progress. It's such a great example of what you just highlighted.
So actually, you know, committing to something doable, like the daily reprogramming, that itself will induce neuroplasticity in your brain, because you're forming a habit, you're making a change, you're doing some regular work. And therefore, any other bigger goals that you might have will be easier if you've done, let's say, 3 or 6 months of solid, if not every single day, at least most days of the week, of doing some kind of daily reprogramming exercise. Then that itself is inducing plasticity, which will make it easier for you to do other things, which I think is a great bonus.
Definitely. One thing that I was reading in James Clear, Atomic Habits, he did like all of the research on what people say is the best habits. And one thing that always has stuck out to me is this idea of habit stacking. Like if you're having such a hard time showing up to whatever that thing is, to schedule it in, really put it on the calendar and put it next to something that's already automatic. So let's say you brush your teeth, you know, right when you hop out of bed without even thinking about it, put your DI practice right after that. So it's just a continuation of automatic habits to sneak in there and maintain in your routine.
There's another trick like that, actually, which I learned about more recently, which I think is called bundling, where you bundle something that you don't really enjoy to something that you do.
I was just thinking that while Jessica was speaking, I was like, that would actually be really successful for me.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, tell us what your example would be then.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because my Vedic meditation has really dropped off during pregnancy. It's really, really hard for me to drop into that for some, I don't know if it's progesterone or what's going on, whereas the DIs are simple because they're guided, you know, there's a lot going into it lying down, whereas Vedic, you're sitting up, you have to drop yourself in through your mantra. And so for me, I've been having to really scoop that back into my morning routine, because I think it'll be really helpful for birth and being able to like get into somewhat of a meditative state and have a mantra to come back to. So for me in the morning, what I enjoy the absolute most out of the morning is probably breakfast. No brainer, right? Because it releases endorphins and all of that great stuff.
Just like barley, one of her authentic
codes. It's just like barley. Honestly, if I need barley to have another good habit, I'll have to stick it next to a food, like a meal. So I've been doing it after breakfast rather than trying to force it in by doing all the obligatory stuff in the beginning that I do, you know, say brush my teeth, gua sha, drink my warm lemon water. You know, those are all things I do for health and beauty and regimen, but I really love breakfast. It's something that I enjoy. I always cook something that I love. And so now I'll do the Vedic meditation after, and it feels kind of rewarding rather than another obligatory regimen.
So I really like that was your example, because A, it's super cute, but B, there's a lot of pressure on people to, when you're starting a new habit, do it first thing in the morning. So for, you know, for some time during early time of lockdown, I was doing my meditation literally first thing. And then as I was, you know, obviously we were all a bit more sedentary during lockdown, so I was making an attempt to be, you know, to do more exercise. Somebody said to me, well, just do it first thing. And I said, I'm sorry, but how many things am I supposed to do first thing in the morning? I mean, it's too much. So I also want to, you know, just say to people, you know, it's human to feel like that as well. And which is why it's really nice for Lacey's thing, which is do this straight after breakfast. And I really like what Jessica said about putting it in the calendar, because then you can put something after lunch. You could put something in the break time between finishing work and starting your evening. And that way you seed more habits throughout the day as well as across the week.
Absolutely. And then Dr. Tara, you know, you talk about this a lot in your book, which I absolutely love, but those sort of four pillars of, you know, shifting your behavior through raised awareness, focused attention, deliberate practice, and accountability. So what are some examples of those four pillars? Like, what does it look like to have raise awareness? Would that be perhaps, you know, recognizing that you want to have this shift and this goal change? Walk us through some examples for all of those.
So let's say I want to lose 10 pounds is the goal. So surfacing from your non-conscious to your conscious, something like, I think I have 3 meals a day, but actually I snack a lot more than I realized, is important, right? So one way to do that is to keep a food diary for a week. When I do that, which I do about once a year, it's very interesting how it's different to what you perceive just in your mind. So, you know, raising awareness is kind of taking the goal that you think you want and then asking yourself why you're not achieving it. And, you know, like with all of our work, what's the subconscious belief that's underneath the thought pattern? So with this, it's like, what's the thing that I'm not realizing that's preventing me from achieving that goal? And again, our work or journaling or seeing a coach or a therapist can help to surface some of those things. Then the focused attention is, so without making any changes, depending on what it is, I usually say a month because, you know, usually working with quite transformative things, just notice every time you snack when you were convinced that you only have your 3 meals a day. Or, you know, notice what food choices you make if you're tired or if you're upset. And then the next stage is the deliberate practice. So that is only having the 3 meals, using a smaller plate so that you're having smaller portions, balancing the protein, fat, and carbohydrate, whatever it is. And then the accountability is having someone or some form of technology to demonstrate to yourself more objectively than subjectively that you are actually doing the things that you've committed to doing and that that's showing progress towards the goal that you want.
I think that's so, so helpful. It obviously ties into so much of the manifestation work. Lacey, could you talk a little bit about how we kind of integrate that and how we could potentially frame this work for the listeners too?
Well, to me, it's like we've created, with the help of Dr. Tara, so many of those steps already within the daily practice. So say somebody is just going through how to manifest or revisiting it. There's a lot actually that really ties into everything we've been talking about. You're casting your list, which is an intention, something you're calling in. It teaches you to call micro, right? Because just like habits and goals, if you're manifestation is far beyond your expanded belief, there's no space for it. It's always fine to put those on your list, but it's not realistic that those will come quickly if you're not expanded. So it's really interesting even just going through that and having that model. And then when you do get into the reprogramming bit, it's so important to look, and I don't know if this would classify under the raised awareness, but whether you're doing inner child shadow or getting into the daily practice, you're really starting to uncover what's blocking you from receiving that intention or that manifestation. You know, the things that are really at the root of why it's not here or why you might be doing X, Y, and Z to sabotage it or push it away. And then it goes through the expansion process. So to me, there's a lot of integration of everything we're talking about, may it be a habit or you're calling in, you know, something into your life that you want that's new, and actually having buildable steps that can have results, you know, while kind of doing therapy and, you know, creating new neuroplasticity at the same time so it can be more effective. That's sort of my two cents on it. It seems really compatible.
We really, you know, factored it into the daily practice and even going through other workshops, making sure we're adding more components of all of those through the workshops. But like if I took a cold example of, you know, let's say my resolution is to hike in nature more days of the week. So my raised awareness might be, okay, well, how many days am I really hiking in nature now? And why has this thing that I've wanted to do for so long not been in action? What am I doing instead? And try to notice my behaviors a bit more. And then the focused attention might be doing journal prompts on this, like really getting to the root. Like, why do I feel like I'm not free to go for a walk whenever I want? Like, why is this, you know, vision in the future of me doing that? And then doing a deep imagining, you know, was this from a limiting belief pattern that I've picked up? Do I feel like I am a people pleaser and need to cater to everyone else's needs before I can cater to my own? And if I can start to shift that and see that, you know, walking is actually honoring myself, then perhaps I can start achieving that goal. And then taking the deliberate practice of going out and doing the walk on a regular basis. And then the accountability piece is checking in with the community, you know, checking in with a friend who's also doing, you know, this work with me and walk through what came up for me in journal prompts. But I also see accountability in maybe a micro way as also a bit of expanders. I can't remember how old I was, but I'll never forget. It was like a New Year's episode on a new segment. And it was these three women round table. It might have been The View, actually. And they all wanted to lose weight for their resolution. And this diet and fitness guy came in and was like, well, you can't be each other's accountability buddy because you're all starting from square one. Like, if someone wants to quit this day, the next person's going to quit, and then you're never going to get done what you need. What you need is more of an expander. So someone that you're looking to that's already embodying that. So I would almost say part of the accountability is trying to connect with your expander, even if you don't know them. Maybe it's just watching them on social media. Do I know someone that goes for hikes daily and posts about it? Maybe I should follow them. And that's part of my accountability.
Yeah, I love that, Jessica. And on that piece, even if you look at getting back to the Beach Body Guide girl, when I did that way back when, and it was actually tremendously effective for me, my body really got ripped. It looked like those before and afters and progress shots. But when I would see those, it was the motivation to continue. But on that exact note, which I think is so important for people to know and hear, I was having lunch before this new lockdown with a girlfriend of mine who, you know, is getting to know the whole LA dating scene and was kind of a doormat through this whole situation. And my other girlfriend was there, and we had to just like really lay it on the line for her. We're like, the moose is dead. Like, there's no coming back from this. He's just not that into, you know, we had to really go there. And she kind of talked about how she was talking to her friend, and her friend had said, well, maybe just send him a text about your feelings just to get it off your chest, you know, of, you know, I don't want anything from you, but I just need the closure of telling you how I felt. And we were like, does your friend have what you want? Like, stop asking your single friends who don't have what you want. And this goes for everything in manifestation. When you are seeking advice or when you're seeking accountability towards something you're trying to achieve, make sure it's from somebody who actually has what you want. And she was like, you're right. I've only been talking to my single friends that are stuck at home with their cats and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, don't send that text. Like, you really want the moose to be buried? Like, stop it.
Totally. I picked up on something that Jess said, which I think is so important for our listeners, which was, what am I doing instead? That's a huge part of raised awareness, because a little bit like you, every morning I wake up and think, I'm going to go for a really long walk today. So it really resonated with me, because then life gets in the way. Usually for me, the answer would be like, you know, I'm working instead. So that's a great way to raise awareness. And then I think just going back to what you said, Lacey, you probably just didn't want to reel off a huge long list, but you know, you said in Child and Shadow that could raise your awareness of something that's blocking you. I actually think that love and money and boundaries are really good for raising your awareness around that as well.
So I'm quickly interrupting this episode to invite you, if you're ready to start your manifestation journey, or if anything you've heard in our manifestation episodes has piqued your interest, to begin. We have a la carte workshops in everything from the basics bundle, which is what we recommend to everyone who starts. It's the formula that actually teaches you how to manifest, unblocked inner child and unblocked shadow. We also have a la carte workshops on love and money. But the real gem is the Pathway membership, because it encompasses every single workshop we have. It's a year-long membership with full access to the few a la carte offerings we have and exclusive workshops not available anywhere else such as the daily practice, which is what everybody in the pathway uses, hopefully at least 3 times a week to daily, in order to truly create the new neural pathways that one needs in order to manifest, and houses the library of our deep imaginings, which is our unique hypnosis process that allows you to get into your subconscious and overwrite those old neural pathways, creating the new ones. You can use our special code EXPANDED, all caps, EXPANDED, to receive $20 off your first a la carte workshop purchase or $20 off your first month of the pathway. Again, that's all caps, EXPANDED, EXPANDED. Okay, now back to the episode.
Let's dive into some of those really core getting to the reasons of why people are failing. And so I just jotted down a couple of different things, but I think it's interesting to go over so people might be able to be like, well, why am I really doing that? Or why can't I succeed at that goal? So a lot of it could be a perfectionist mentality, wanting to be that A-plus student. How can that come in when we're trying to achieve goals? I sort of see it as like, you need to get everything done exactly the way, the perfect way. Otherwise, it's like 100% or nothing.
That's definitely a huge reason why people fail. So, you know, you make a resolution and it's either to not do something at all or regularly do something. Then so often, as soon as people make one mistake, they say, okay, well, that's it. I haven't met my resolution. So they give up completely. And for me, what happened a lot was when I was traveling a lot, jet lag would knock me off my usual gym schedule. You know, I'd come back from somewhere, I'd be tired or just all over the place. And then it would be like 2 or 3 weeks since I last went to the gym or a yoga class. And starting again was hard. And so a lot of people fall at that hurdle. And I really learned from personal experience and that shared this with as many people as I could. When you go off the regimen that you need to be on to, you know, meet your goal, if you fail, don't completely give up. Just start again. Don't even waste time beating yourself up for why did I eat those snacks or not go for a hike at all this week? Just start again.
That's what I personally do as well. I learned that a long time ago that it became more successful for me to just pick up where I left off. Even when we were doing the magnetism challenge, I had put out, you know, this little thing on our Instagram at To Be Magnetic asking how many people are still on or how many people have fallen behind. And there was like 73% that had fallen behind. And it's like, no worries, just start where we are today. And that I learned was really powerful as somebody who's a recovering perfectionist, that it just gets me a lot further than throwing in the towel if it's not totally perfect.
100%. Yeah, that even happened with me during the challenge.
Really?
After the first week, I was like, dang, like I'm behind. But all I would do instead of, you know, in the past, I totally would have been like, oh, I have to start fresh again January 1st and do it every day. But now I was just like, okay, well, I'll do like these two today and I'll just do a different one tomorrow. And then by the weekend, I'll have caught up already. So it was just, you know, removing that guilt, removing that shame and being able to just say, no, I want to do this now. I don't need to delay my gratification by starting it over again later. I can just pick it back up when I want. And it doesn't need to be in the exact day or time or whatever it is as everyone else. It's the commitment of the daily practice. It's just the commitment to the change whenever you can get it in.
Yeah. And another really good way to surface your blockers is if you didn't do something, so like, let's say at the end of the first week where you were behind, really asking yourself why you slipped behind. And, you know, is it because work got in the way? Is it because life got in the way? Is it because you just didn't feel like doing it one day? None of those answers are bad. I always say, did you do what you said you would? And if not, why not? Because then you're still learning.
It's kind of getting to the root of like, what is going on in that focused awareness or raising awareness and focused attention pieces? What came up in the way and what other blockers do I need to sort of pay attention to help myself succeed in the future?
Which is honestly, like, at the end of the day, you know, what I was sort of saying in the beginning, when we resolve to do something, but we don't actually understand the intention of what's under it. And just like you had said, Dr. Tara, if it's the weight thing, you've got to look at your confidence. You have to look at the root. And I think that that is such a key, important piece you just brought back around, because you really do. Like, if you're falling off, why? If you're doing X, Y, and Z, why? Knowing that bottom piece is what's going to really help the transition, having understanding around it.
Okay, so another one would be, you know, people pleasing, not putting your needs first. And this is one I've heard from so many friends. I'm sure I've done this. You just make excuses. You're like, oh, I have this thing, or I can't do it because I have this. And there's just all the reasons in the world why you can't put yourself first. What is sort of the the psychology behind that? And how do people just start to take that next step to see that they potentially do have the time and not really give all the excuses as much weight? Because they're kind of like a protection barrier.
I think that's a really energetic one, don't you, Lacey, in terms of whatever caused you shame in childhood, you know, being called selfish or because you put yourself first. That's the first thing that's coming into my mind. What do you think?
Exactly what you're saying, Dr. Tara. That's how I would view it as well. Another example of this is a woman who DM'd during the magnetism challenge, and she was doing how to manifest in the new updated version of how to manifest. It has you go through clearing space, you know, with your authentic code. And she, you know, was asking, she was like, I realize when I'm taking inventory of my physical space, it's everything that my mom has gifted me that I feel really guilty about getting rid of or telling her I don't want more of. And, you know, when we start to actually uncover that stuff and look at the whys, and I was like, great, go do a DI on why you feel guilty, because that's just codependent behavior. It could be enmeshment. There could be so many things going on there. Or just you have a really kind mom and you don't want to hurt her feelings, but let's get to the bottom of why. Actually, somebody corrected me recently. Rather than killing two birds with one stone, you're feeding two birds with one scone, I guess is a more appetizing way to say it. I actually like that. It is a pretty harsh old saying. But, you know, you're kind of feeding two birds with one scone by clearing the energetics beneath that guilt, that shame, that whatever that's going on there, the codependency. And then you're physically going to clear it as well. You know, in this example, all of that stuff from that's not serving you, it's not in attunement with your authentic self. It's literally taking up space from your manifestation. So yeah, I would say most of that usually comes down to energetic when I look through like a manifestation lens.
Yeah. And I guess with maturity and doing this work, that, you know, it can be a realization. So I was asked to answer some questions for a self-care magazine. And the last question was, is there a self-care myth you'd like to bust? Now, there's lots of neuromyths I like to bust, but I really had to think about this one. And I was almost at the point where I was going to say, I can't think of anything. And then I wrote myth, spending time on your self-care is selfish. Truth, you can't help anybody else if you don't look after yourself first.
Absolutely. And we've said this before in another podcast. I think it resonated with so many people. Self-care is one of the most magnetic things you can do because it's you being in your worth. Oh my gosh, like I just even think about for women in general and so much programming for years and years and years that is selfish. Unlocking that, unblocking that, and realizing that it's actually vital for magnetism, for everything, that is huge, humongous. That's a resolve in itself.
It's vital to your mental health and the performance of your brain. You know, if people just want it really kind of practical and scientific, it's vital to those things. And actually, because the neural manifestation process and that sort of, you know, sustainable behavior thing from my book are based on the same research, there's lots of similarities between them. So just like if you know, start to do your self-care, brain-based self-care, like you drink more water, you move around more, you sleep at regular times, etc., that has a cumulative beneficial effect on your brain and body. It's very similar to how in manifestation, when you start to get little things, you know, the micro manifestations coming true, and you believe in it more and you build that trust muscle, then it accumulates and more things come true and then bigger things become real. So I love the fact that they're so connected in that way.
Yeah, and I think that's really important for people to know. sometimes it takes building up that trust and seeing that great things come from it, that you can trust it more and more, even when painful things have to happen. It might take a little bit of building out of a dynamic or whatever. So yeah, I love that from seeing a science perspective, because I think most of us can trust that out the gate, when, especially when we read those facts, you know, in a magazine or something like that, and start to instill those habits. But also realizing if we do want to attract more of what we want, we have to be in our authentic, whole, worthy power. And that's a big piece of it. So I love that crossover and connection as well so much.
And then this is another really big one for people, which is they start to self-sabotage, which is truly rooted in sort of their fear of failure or even their fear of success. People don't recognize that it is rooted in fear. They're just like, I just can't seem to get this thing done. And if they really, you know, looked at their behaviors, they might notice some self-sabotaging behaviors. Why are we so fearful of getting the things we want oftentimes?
Yeah, that's one I can never wrap my head around. What is the science on that and the research, Dr. Tara, fear of success?
So it's much more popularly said that you throw into your shadow things about yourself that you're ashamed of or that you don't like or that you were, you know, made to feel guilty about. But there's a huge population of people who have lowish self-esteem for whatever various reasons, which all of us can have at certain times of our life. And they actually throw the good things about them into their shadow because they can't accept a compliment. They don't believe that they deserve, you know, the success that they are actually skillfully able to get. You know, that's psychoanalysis, but it's related to that because our need to belong to a tribe is so strong. Sometimes, and I think more so for women than men, if you outshine people too much, you risk being excluded from the tribe. And that's really, really primal. So if you put those two things together, then either low self-esteem or a feeling that you might get excluded or become isolated because you've outshone your peers are two very, very, you know, when I say basic, I mean primal reasons to not reach your potential.
That makes sense to me. Okay.
I mean, that one is so, so key. And it's so interesting because I actually, you know, have navigated this at various points where as I'm looking to up-level my career, there was a point, I would say like 3 or 4 years ago where, you know, I had to have a conversation with myself and be like, why am I not pushing harder on this or moving forward on this? And what really got to the root was it was hitting an old codependency button for me that I felt very connected with my partner. And I was nervous that if I threw everything into my work and pushed 100% and moved forward, I wouldn't have time for him. And that was so scary for me. And I had to really, again, like add in that trust moment by moment, have a full day of work where I don't talk to him at all and recognize, oh, we come together at night. This is great. Everything's fine. I don't need to worry about it, and move past sort of that codependency piece. And now I'm like, I could go weeks without connecting with him and I know we're rock solid, but it takes those micro moments of trust building to know that, okay, I can step into this new space and still be loved and still be valued and still have my connection. I don't have to fear losing it.
Yeah, that's so interesting too, Jessica, because I think you've shared, you know, in the past that your mom is really successful and works quite a bit. Am I correct on that? In finance?
Yeah, yeah.
And then sort of what happened between your mom and dad, I could so see the linear root block there. That's incredible. So that goes to show people, and this is so real. We see this in manifestation work all the time. You always hear, don't let anybody dim your light. This is what we're talking about. So now it's really interesting to know the context from you, Dr. Tara, because I just never knew behind fear of success. I'm like, how could somebody be fearful of success? But this actually makes a lot of sense, in that dimming your light, it's just so primal, like you're saying, that we've been taught that, especially amongst women. I think that's huge, probably men as well, or anybody who's identifying as either. But I certainly see that around women, which I think can be quite primal too, getting back to just the simplicity of needing that partner who chooses you for reproduction or to go and hunt for you or just whatever the thing is, if we can all evolve past the fear of shining our light bright, being authentic, being really worthy, that's where the magic lives.
Well, as you always say, love and money are the masculine and the feminine and the yin and the yang. And there's a really, really sad statistic that came out recently, and I can't remember the numbers, but of the number of relationship breakdowns when a woman's salary exceeds her male partner's. You know, and what I'm trying to get to is it's both ways. It's not just that women are saying, oh, well, I don't want to outshine because I want this man to protect me and my baby. It's that the male expectation in the system is that you're not a man if you're not earning more than your wife.
100%. Yeah.
So that's really sad.
Which is, yeah, the dismantling that is, I think, happening and needing to happen of these stereotypes.
Yeah.
Well, and even, you know, kind of you were touching on it, Lacey, but the example I even got, my dad was a super workaholic, like even more so than my mom. So seeing him do that was like, okay, it also probably instilled a bit of, well, that's the man's role to be the workaholic, not you. You know, like you can be successful, but not working as much as the male or what, or the father figure, whatever it may be. So there's so many layers when you really dive in, and especially an inner child and moving through all of that, where you can really pinpoint what is blocking your intention for the year based off of the modeling that you picked up. And who knew these New Year's resolutions could be so in depth, but it's so true.
Well, they are layered. And I think the overarching theme of this episode is if you are somebody who's going to have either a resolution or an intention, it's so important to understand that it should be micro, that you know the why beneath it, why you even have this thing that you A, no longer want in your habit library, or something you desire to bring in to your life, the steps you need to take to actually achieve it. I mean, that's, I think, the real overarching thing here, and why we see so much failure around A, when we hear, but I'm not manifesting, or B, that I just couldn't stick with my resolution.
Yeah. And I think it's a little bit like tests. If you set a resolution and within a matter of weeks, you're doing it like you've always done it your whole life, then you've got no blocks around that. But if you repeatedly fail the same New Year's resolution, you know, and I know people who've said the same thing every year for 10 years, then there's some serious unblocking, probably child or shadow work to do.
Okay, so I'm going to throw out a question about competition and effectiveness, because it's so interesting. Daniel and I always have this conversation, and I don't quite know the core of it. So essentially, I always am the firm believer that whatever, you know, exactly what we're teaching now, whatever is blocking you, if you're unable to succeed at your goal, look at that internal patterning that's operating and then start making tweaks per that. And so when it comes to competition, a lot of times it's like, I have to be better than this person. Well, you're sort of looking for that other person to validate you or to be validated by an industry. And if you can validate yourself, then it can be a more sort of like rewarding piece. But then you look at people like, you know, you see Michael Jordan in the Last Dance documentary. He made everyone an enemy in order to be wildly successful. So where is that line between, okay, I'm using this as motivation, and this motivation isn't helpful because I'm really just looking for validation? Like, how effective is competition when it's rooted in something that we truly feel we're lacking?
So again, going back to our evolution, the ideal is collaboratively competitive. So, you know, there is part of human drive and motivation that is positively affected by a sense of competition. But if the outcome can be for the greater good, and there's a way that there's many winners, then that's absolutely the ideal in terms of all the bonding hormone like oxytocin, as well as the reward neurotransmitter dopamine. So here I'd like to speak a little bit about what we're now calling negative energy transfer, and we used to call psychic trespassing, which is a note to self, basically, that if somebody's really triggering you with envy and that's driving your competitiveness, then you absolutely need to look at yourself and do that shadow work. If there's an intrinsic motivation because there's something that you want to achieve, then having an expander that you don't feel directly competitive with, you understand there are enough resources out there for you to both be successful at that thing or several people, but seeing what they're achieving is spurring you on to do more, then that can be a good thing. So I think it is a very fine balance.
Yeah, I do think there's a sense of healthy competition. And even if we look at, you know, this might be a stretch, but civilized cultures in areas that were more dense and put together versus cultures that were more vast, you can see there's been a lot more technological advances quicker because we see once somebody create a wheel, we look at that and we go, ooh, I could actually create a little piece here that would make the wheel go faster. So it's like there is a sense of that is development in human nature and the greater good, like you're saying, that I think is good. But from an energetic perspective, I think competition is usually a pretty good indicator that there's time to look at why we're wanting what we want, because we're not just following our own authentic pace to get there. And I have so many examples of this. It wasn't until I stopped looking at putting my blinders up and looking all around me and seeing how somebody's doing X, Y, and Z, and I should do it too like this in order to achieve yada, yada, yada. And until I put my blinders on and I really looked at what's making me feel that I need to do that in order to be loved, that's when I could let everything go and just really listen to any type of intuitive or authentic ping that was coming up that was really showing me my correct way, which led me into this work, which led me onto this path, which continues to lead me to working with, you know, you guys. And then I tend to outperform most people that I know. And it's not that there's a competition there. It's just that I'm so steadfast on my own authenticity that it just continues. There's so much support behind it, which is really interesting. Whereas like even using the Michael Jordan example, correct me if I'm wrong, but is he not a raging alcoholic now? I mean, there could be many things contributing to that, but I wouldn't call him happy, mm-hmm. you know, and living a very fulfilled, happy existence. And I think he's gone through a lot of personal mayhem. And now I know he's in really terrible health. I mean, there's just so much going on there that it's probably a good example that there were a lot of reasons he had to be the best athlete known to man. I mean, many things I think feeding into that from childhood to adulthood to once you're in the limelight. I mean, there's so many things going on there. But to me, I think at the end of the day, the real score is when you have all the things that you desire in life from a truly authentic soul place, you got there at your pace in your happy stride, upgrading at your pace. You know, not to repeat myself, I think that's where the magic is, the absolute magic.
And I think too, for him, who knows, we can't say in retrospect, but I would imagine if some of those inner things were worked out, he might find his competitive edge regardless. If that's his authentic code, I doubt it would dampen it anymore. It's almost like the idea of like the tortured artist complex. You know, I have to be sad and depressed and feel all these emotions in order to make something really meaningful. And a lot of artists are really fearful of getting, you know, mental health treatment for that reason, because they think they're going to lose their cool factor or whatever it may be, or their edge.
I see that actually being the biggest block to the artists that I've ever known that aren't successful. That and if I shine too bright, if I market too much, I'm no longer an artist anymore. So those are the two things I see that I'm always like, oh, you could be so successful.
Yeah.
Because I think the real root too is like if you're in homeostasis, mind, body, soul, and really integrated and looking at these factors and, you know, moving through this practice and bringing things to awareness and unblocking, you're really connecting deeper to your soul, and what is out there for you is coming. You know, like it's not going to push it away. You're going to connect deeper with your authenticity if it's success that you're searching for, especially if it's success that helps the collective. It's going to attract to you faster.
Totally. Always.
That's so true. Just, you know, the word aligned just came into my mind as you were speaking, and whether it's head, heart, and gut, or however people want to think of alignment. Another reason that resolutions fail is because somewhere you're out of alignment in wanting that thing.
Absolutely. Okay, so for everyone listening at home, So we kind of have probably three different listeners. We have people who just did the magnetism challenge with us. If you've completed that and you really unblocked a ton of stuff and you're like, okay, where do I navigate next? We highly recommend that you pop into Inner Child and start looking through how you're shifting sort of these limiting beliefs, how they've already shifted, how the things that are correlated with the list that you're calling in are connected to Inner Child moments, and really go through those phases and give yourself what you were needing there. For people who haven't done the Magnetism Challenge, now is the perfect time to start because it's the top of the year. You can start at any time, go at your own pace. We have all of the information in the highlights. And then for the person who might not be in the pathway and isn't quite sure, we do have our free clarity exercise. And I think that's such a good DI if you're a pathway or not pathway, to just start to get clear about who you are. What do you want? What type of life are you looking for? What a great exercise to do on this New Year's Day and over this new year, a new month.
And we mentioned it in the intro, but if you're really wanting to learn the deeper science behind everything we've literally been talking about in this conversation, Dr. Tara's book.
Oh, yes.
Oh, thank you so much.
I mean, it truly covers literally everything, the micro, the, you know, the raised awareness, all of that piece. I mean, everything.
So you guys have your homework cut out for you, but it is going to be so fulfilling. And I just feel like now that we're in 2021, there is a bit of an ease that's a little different this year. Maybe it's something celestially that's happening, but I feel like moving into the new section of unblocking and all of that is going to come with a lot of lightness.
Well, anything has to be better than last year.
Totally.
Absolutely. Let's vision hold for that.
Yes.
Well, thank you guys again. This is such a wonderful conversation and I always learn so, so much. So honored to co-host with both of you. And thanks again.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the episode, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, we did. And in case you're not totally ready to join the pathway yet, I wanted to share a few of our free offerings that I'll often suggest to people as a little bit of a blueprint to get them started on their manifestation journey. The first place I like to direct people completely for free is the Motivation. You can see it linked below or on our homepage as our testimony library. And it's categorized by different subjects, whether you're calling in career, money, love, wellness, and much more. When you're reading about a member's experience of what they manifested, you're actually seeing to believe and showing your subconscious that that very thing is possible for you. The second place I like to direct people is to the free clarity exercise, which is also linked below. In it, you get to try our own unique hypnosis process, learn about the science, and some journaling prompts. And the best part about this, you'll get a tiny taste of what it's like to go into your hypnotic state, bring your subconscious forward, and create new neural pathways while receiving clarity. And the third thing, if you haven't listened to it on this podcast yet, please go back to the episode titled Manifestation 101, where you'll learn the basics of neural manifestation to truly understand this process. So go ahead and check out those free resources, the Motivation, the free clarity exercise, and the episode Manifestation 101, all linked below. And in an effort to make sure to have representation in this process series, go ahead and submit any process testimonials you have, especially to our LGBTQ+ community, our BIPOC, as well as the WISE, which is anyone in the community who is 45 and over. All right, we'll be back next week.